Welcome to the Minimum Viable Podcast, a project of the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. Our mission is to inspire, connect, and empower people in order to promote a culture of innovation in the U.S. national security community. You can learn more about DEF and get involved at DEF.org. That's DEF.org. We look forward to your ideas and are excited to connect you with other doers working on hard problems.
So let's get started. I'm Jed Weiner. It's nice to meet all of you. I run Cornerstones, which is a new program at Defense Entrepreneurs Forum, which is focused on giving substantive training to entrepreneurs, angel investors, and venture capitalists on skill set issues. So we did, for example, we've done accounting so far, accounting for emerging companies. We're doing pricing, and today we're doing financial modeling. So every month, we usually do two sessions every 2 weeks. Another part of Cornerstones is monthly practice pitch nights, which haven't started yet, and they'll probably start in October. We're putting that together, where entrepreneurs that are members of Defense, the DEF, will have an opportunity to practice their, and they're starting companies, will have an opportunity to pitch. There'll be probably two entrepreneurs or two emerging companies will pitch, and we'll have mock judges that will comment on their presentations, and also other members can. So that will be coming soon. And again, if there's any other ideas for Cornerstones, building up skills or practicing certain areas, let us know if you're interested in that, or if you want to speak, you're welcome to speak. That's what it's here for. So I just wanted to welcome our speaker today, who is going to be speaking on financial modeling, Samir Jagita. And financial modeling is just not financial modeling. It's more holistic. To know financial modeling, you really have to have a broader view of the whole business. It's really holistic. So it really goes well beyond just the spreadsheet. You have to understand, it's really high strategy, understanding the strategic nature of the whole business. So it's a hard skill set. And Samir is an entrepreneur and an investor. He founded Redbooks, which he sold to The List. And Redbooks was a leading information service and technology company focused on sales intelligence for the media industry. And now he has a second startup called Robuz, which is machine learning, natural language processing application that pushes real-time news alerts on people and companies. Earlier in his career, he worked at a hedge fund, so he has that experience as well. And what's very applicable here is that he's ranked number 10 globally in financial modeling. There's a well-known competition called Model Off for financial modeling. So he was ranked number 10 in that competition. And he's also a member of GRIP, which is a platform for entrepreneurs and venture capitalists. It's a platform of advisors of different areas. For example, financial modeling. Samir does financial modeling and other things, you know, because broadly based. There's data analytics specialists, different areas. So he's a member of that platform of advisors, which offers many different types of advice for entrepreneurs and venture capitalists. So I think that's a pretty good introduction. And I'll hand it over to him. Thank you very much for taking the time, Samir. We really appreciate it.
So thanks for the intro, Jed. I think that was a great overview. The kickoff for financial modeling. And you know, my goal for today, I want to talk about just demystify some aspects of financial modeling. And there'll be plenty of time for Q&A afterwards with any specific questions. So you know, Jed talked a lot about my bio, the entrepreneur side, the investor side. And I see a lot of startup models because of that. So I also do angel investing and some mentoring of startups. So see a lot of startup models and kind of seen the gamut of good ones, of bad ones, of ones that could be improved, and have a lot of thoughts on it. Ironically, Trish's question, her icebreaker that she kicked it off with about fantasy sports is how I got to start on spreadsheets. My first spreadsheet was tracking my fantasy football team. This would have been in the early 90s, well before Yahoo Sports and ESPN and the internet doing it for us. But my first spreadsheet that I really created was fantasy football related. So, you know, when I was putting together this presentation, I saw a headline that I thought was really interesting. It was the spreadsheet error led to an Edinburgh hospital opening delay. It, you know, something so simple can cause, you know, real world issues. And in the article, you find out this the error was a copy and paste error that led to an assumption being wrong regarding airflow. And it's going to cost them £16 million to fix it. It's so spreadsheets matter. It's important. It's important to get the models right, and it's important to get the models accurate. And, you know, when I talk about my goals for this presentation today, my first goal is the importance of having accurate financial models, and hopefully that headline is a good demonstration of that. The second goal for this presentation is I want you to have some comfort putting together financial analysis. It doesn't have to be complex. It could be simple as long as it meets the business case that you're trying to solve or that decision you're trying to solve. So, you know, I know some people are kind of scared of Excel. Other people are comfortable, and I kind of want to level the playing field to some degree and create a level of comfort on Excel. And then along the way, I'm going to walk through some financial models so you can see different examples. So, you know, bringing that together, my agenda today. The beginning is, you know, what is financial modeling and why build financial models? After that, I'm going to talk about some best practices, some tips and tricks. And then I think it's also important to know what are the dangers of a bad model and the common errors that I see. Along the way, I'm going to walk through some sample models and we'll have time for Q&A afterwards for any specific questions. So the first agenda item, what is financial modeling? And, you know, as Jed mentioned in the intro, it's not just a spreadsheet. It is a representation of a business case or scenario. It's putting your business strategy or business plan into a numerical representation that's very structured. So it's like a word problem in math where, you know, Bill has two apples, goes to the store, buys six apples. How many apples does he have? That's a type of model or word problem that you can convert to a math equation. And financial modeling is very similar. You know, we may use different terms, but if you boil it down to its essence, it's a math word problem. Some other aspects that are common in financial models, it's often in Excel. People use Google Sheets or other spreadsheet programs, but it's in a spreadsheet. And the reason it is because it's dynamic. If you update a set of assumptions, it changes the output. So if you have a business, there's obviously variability in performance and the assumptions that you go into it in terms of pricing, in terms of demand, in terms of cost. So you're able to change a set of assumptions and it changes your output. And it's also predictive because it's dynamic. It can be predictive across different scenarios. It forecasts future financial performance. You know, the most common one that people think of when they think about a financial model is a three-statement model. Think about the income statement, the balance sheet, and cash flow statement. And that's probably the one that is most common. It's not, financial models are much more than that, though. It also includes KPIs related to business and functional areas. It includes subscription metrics, and I'm going to go into more detail on that. It's one of the sample models I'm showing. Marketing funnels, sales funnels, inventory analysis, working capital analysis. And the specific ones you need are very business case centric. So my business, Redbooks, was a SaaS business, so we really cared about the subscription metrics. We didn't have inventory, the working capital wasn't a very working capital intensive business, so those two were less relevant. And other businesses, the inventory side may be the biggest driver. But the key idea is that there's models tied to that functional area. And then once you tie it to KPIs, you can build some analysis around it. And, you know, which leads to why do we build financial models? And, you know, the most important reason, it leads to data-driven decision-making. It make a decision and support it with real world data. Along the way, you know, I think that the thought process involved in building a financial model is valuable. To build one well, you really have to think about what is important and what's not important, and then be able to convey that in a structured representation. And while doing that, it's you really understand what are the business drivers that are impacting your business. You know, what are the assumptions that are important, and what are the assumptions that, you know, if they change a lot, really don't have that much of an impact on the business. And so that way I know what my KPIs are and what are the main drivers. In more reasons to build financial models, it's to share business information with others. You know, accounting and finance is the language of business, so you need to know the numbers. And if you're raising capital, talking to investors or talking to banks, they're going to be asking about financial model and really understand your numbers, and they want you to understand your numbers as well. So some examples of models that I touched on before, subscription metrics, where, you know, if I'm looking at decisions, I want to think about the trade-off between revenue, gross adds, churn, and customer acquisition cost. And we'll come back to that in a second. And then for working capital, I want to know, I was talking to a startup a couple weeks ago that's very working capital intensive. So they have to buy raw materials in advance, and it's about a 2-month production cycle. And their payment terms are, they get revenue, it's a net 30 payment. So they have a 90-day working capital cycle. And the first rule of startups is don't run out of cash. So because of that, they have to be very cognizant of their working capital because it really ties into their cash flow. And if anyone's read the book Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, talking about Nike, he talks about the cash to buy inventory for the first 10, 15 years of the company. And that was a huge factor that they thought about day in and day out. It's a huge important line item for those kind of businesses. So, you know, let me dig a little deeper on subscription metrics and show you one of the models that I built. I built this model for another startup, and I took out all the identifying information and kind of put in dummy data, but it gives you a good sense of how a model is built, especially around subscription metrics. So for subscription metrics, you know, these are the four line items that I mentioned: gross adds, ARPU, customer acquisition cost, monthly customer churn, and these are all assumptions that I have. So with these assumptions, I can see how it impacts my ending subscribers over time. It impacts my revenue. It impacts my monthly recurring revenue, my annual recurring revenue, what my marketing costs are, what my lifetime value is. And then a couple of ratios that investors look at is lifetime revenue to customer acquisition cost, or lifetime value to customer acquisition cost. They kind of move into best practices. The first and most important thing is make it readable. So when I see a lot of models, I either know if it's done well, if it's easy to read, or if it's not easy to read, it's probably going to be complicated and have a lot of errors in it. So easy to read models, they're a lot easier for the user to audit and make sure there's no errors. And that, I suspect that's the issue with the hospital that I started the presentation with. Also, we're often sharing the models with everyone else, with other people. Let's make it easy for them to understand the model. And similar to pros, readability demonstrates clarity of thought. So when I see a well-done model in terms of a very logical format, I have a lot more confidence that the business plan is done well. In the ways to enhance readability, do not hard code numbers within formulas. This is, you know, the first rule of financial modeling and probably the most important thing that someone would start out with in financial modeling. If there's numbers that are hard coded in, it makes it very hard to debug. And if you look at this, if you look at my model that I built here, these are all formulas without hard-coded numbers. And the second rule is probably, by convention, hard-coded inputs are in blue and formulas are in black. So if you look, again, back here, Anything I could overwrite is in blue, and anything that's a formula is in black. These are, even though they're assumptions, these are black because they have a scenario analysis in it. But at least as a, if I pass along the model to someone else, they know what I could change, and they know what they shouldn't change. And it helps people quickly see what's an assumption and what's a calculation. The other thing that's important when together, make sure it's printer friendly. It's kind of an easy thing to overlook on a screen. When I first audit a model, if anyone sends me one, first thing I do is print it out and make sure there's no errors in it. And once there's no errors, then it's easier to analyze. So, you know, the model I put together, it's very easy to read. It's small print because I have a lot of columns, it's easy to bring. That's the style I like. There's another model I wanted to show you also for printing. This one is, it's from a certification company for financial modeling. And this is one of their sample exam solutions. So, you know, I thought it was good to show you a different style. You'll see, again, the same thing I mentioned before, the blue assumptions, which you know how to change, and the other pieces are in black, all these formulas. Both of us, we also, if we linked another worksheet, we use a different color. Again, it makes it easy for someone to read, and they make it very printer friendly as well. So now when I first get the model, I can print it out and then see if it makes logical sense. And, you know, probably the most, and then kind of moving beyond the basics, you know, as Jed started, when I look at a financial model, does it reflect the business strategy? Does it look at the pricing? Does it look at the production? Does it look at hiring? Does it fit what you're telling me qualitatively about the business? Do the numbers support what you're saying? I was talking to a business about a month ago that was creating a marketplace, and they're debating a subscription business or essentially take a percentage of revenue. And, you know, the model, you can look at it two different ways and see what makes the best sense for them. And it's important for both of those to be consistent as they think about what drivers they want. And the second part is, do the assumptions reflect the key drivers of the business? Again, these are the ones I mentioned for a subscription business and same with inventory business. And I kind of just want to do a quick kind of model change with the subscription business. So here's the subscriber model I built, and I kind of want you to take a look at the year two ending subscribers. I have it as 3,000 right now. Starts with zero subscribers, adds 100 every month for the first year, 200 a month for the next year, and I have a 2% churn rate. And I want to make a couple changes, and just, you can see the impact it has. So if I change the churn to 4%, it goes down about 500 subscribers. If I change it to 1%, it goes up about 300 subscribers. So, you know, I would say it's a relatively small impact on the churn. So the biggest driver is going to be ads. But now if I started up 100,000 subscribers with a 2% churn rate, I'm at 64,000. If I'm able to drop it to 1%, I'm only down 19,000 subs. It's a big difference. I get another 17,000, 18,000 from before. So as I scale, churn becomes more important. So it's important to know where you are in your business cycle, because your KPIs and metrics may change. And then also want to show you the downside scenario. Say churn goes to 4%, I'm down to 40,000 subs. It's a big impact. So as you think about kind of the business over time, when you're starting out in subscription business, gross ads matter. Just make sure those customers come in. And as the business gets better, it's important to make sure you're keeping them with the churn. This kind of ties to it. So as well, you know, a model also helps you do some sensitivity analysis, some scenario analysis. You can understand upside cases and downside cases. You know, I played around a little bit with the model here. I also built it into this model where if I want to change the base case and show what the best case is or worst case, it's easy to start flipping around the data. And importantly, I want to understand what assumptions have an impact on the business. What some impacts financials much more than others. And as I mentioned before, the impact of an assumption changes as the company scales. Also, a common error that I wanted to just kind of point out, you know, watch for assumption ranges that give nonsensical results when combined. So an example, if you have revenue compounding for 10 years and expenses stay fixed, you never have to hire anyone, you'll have nonsensical margins that wouldn't be realistic and would really stand out in a model. And there's many cases like that where if you play around with one area, it may have an impact on another area of the model. Some tips and tricks that I want to highlight. You know, the first one, I think this kind of separates people starting out with Excel to ones that are a lot more comfortable with it, is the function VLOOKUP. It's an Excel function that finds data within a table. And I have an example here that I want to show you. So I put a very simple order table here, where here's the order ID, the customer, and order amount. So if I put in the order ID 12345, it's going to get customer A, order amount 10. If I change the order ID, I pull the relevant column, 6, 6, 7, same thing. And the way you've built that function, first thing is you put in the number that the cell that you're looking up. So the lookup value is here. It's where I'm looking for the data, what column I'm looking at. So order ID is 1, customer would be 2, extra comma, and then I put 0 for false and exact match. And that's how you build a VLOOKUP. And I think it's just an important one to know if you're building a lot of models. The second one, and it sounds very simple, but use Google. That's how I find a lot of things where I've never done it before in a model. Someone probably has done what you're trying to do before, and it's just easier to use code that people already built. And then similar to that, for advanced users, Visual Basic, it's the programming language within Excel. If you have a basic comfort with Visual Basic, it's really helpful because there's code available in Google searches. And really the piece that you have to know is how to insert modules within to Excel and run a macro. A couple of dangers of a bad model and then common errors I see is a loss of focus on the highest line impact line items. So, you know, I'll get a model and the main revenue line item, what's 80% of revenue will be, you know, 5% of the model and 95% will be on all these ancillary revenue items that are not going to matter. Again, this is, you know, I'm talking mostly for startups where if you get your core business right, everything else kind of flows through it. If you're doing an LBO of an existing business and every line item and dollar matters to service the debt, you know, you actually want to have that detail. But for most startups, it's getting the main line items right. The other one is that, you know, bad assumptions lead to bad decisions. So if you're able to lay out what assumptions you're basing your decisions on, you can actually have a grounded result. You can have grounded discussions around it where, you know, other people on your team may say, hey, these assumptions don't make any sense, or yes, those seem reasonable. I think that we can get that price. And again, if there's, you know, either a bad model or no model, you know, I feel like decisions end up becoming tied to anecdotes and whoever speaks the loudest, they're not grounded in data. And, you know, I'm not saying that data has to be the end all be all with the decision, but at least if you're going against a data or model, there's a conscious choice to do so. Some common errors I see. One is having no model. Again, that ties to having anecdotes rather than data. The second one, which I think is a little bit worse, is having an unused model that's not used for decision making. It gives a false level of comfort where I have a model, so I feel like there's data behind it, but it's not really used. And that often goes hand in hand with too complex of a model. where the business logic is convoluted. It doesn't focus on key drivers. There's lots of detail and assumptions for a small percentage of revenue, which is not the main business driver. And, you know, a quote from John Maynard Keynes, it's better to be roughly right than precisely wrong. And I think that's important when you're putting together a model. It does not have to be too complex. It just has to have the high level pieces right to lay out your business case and business scenario. A couple of mechanical errors that I see often, and I just want to highlight, is where assumptions are mixed with calculations and errors result when people update the model. So, you know, if you look at this model from the certification, they know not to touch the model. If I start mixing in assumptions right here, it gets very confusing for someone to use the model. And you'll see that in mind, where the assumptions are laid out in its own tab and the model is in a separate tab. The second mechanical error I see a lot is where people put summary columns in the middle. So they'll put a quarterly column here between month 3 and month 4, between month 6 and month 7, between month 9 and 10, and then 12 and 13, they'll put an annual and end up adding up all those quarterly columns. And it happens more often than I would imagine. So, you know, I kind of showed some of these models along the way. The subscription model, you know, a couple things to highlight. One, the assumptions are set up where you could run multiple scenarios through a toggle. The second one, I think, is this kind of ties into, does the model fit the business case and business strategy? A lot of investors look at the ratio customer lifetime value to customer acquisition cost, and they want a ratio of 3:1. They want to make sure that the customers you're acquiring are valuable enough to support the marketing spend. One of the things that I think gets overlooked in that calculation is that a lot of people think about customer lifetime revenue. They take what's the lifetime revenue, how much am I going to get from the customer, rather than how much does it cost me to serve that customer as well. So if I have an 80% contribution margin or a 90% contribution margin, you know, that's one set of economics. But if I have a 40% contribution margin, it's a much different customer lifetime value than revenue decision. So I think it's important to know how your business works rather than take off-the-shelf formulas, which may or may not account for differences between market structures or different types of businesses. Again, you'll see with the structure, there's ways to set scenarios for upside and downside. In the model side, again, the assumptions are formatted differently and then drive the model. So I use purple, the same as the Financial Modeling Institute, and then black is formulas. All the calculations are driven by the model. There's no assumptions written here. There's nothing hard-coded. And if someone prints it out, they're able to see where all these calculations are from. So they know revenue is ARPU times average subscribers. They're not trying to pull average subscribers from a different area. For MRR, they know it's ARPU times ending subscribers. Again, the calculations rate is laid out, so no one's guessing how it's done if it's printed out rather than trying to dig through formulas. The second model I showed you is the Financial Modeling Institute, and a couple things I wanted to highlight. One, I already showed you is the color formatting. The assumptions are all in blue, the calculations are in black. The readability, all the assumptions are grouped together, and there's schedules behind all the important line items. So if I talk about net sales price, it lays out all the calculations for me. I'm not guessing and trying to audit a formula to see how they're calculating it. And you know, this one I think is kind of the best practice. They put footer information, which is very helpful, so you know when a model is run and you have version control. So models change over time. And if I printed out a model, you know, 922 versus 917, I know which one I should be looking at. I also, you know, with the page numbers, I know if I'm missing any page numbers. You know, where I only have 80% of the model, I'm missing a couple schedules, it's easier to notice. So that's, you know, that's kind of the quick overview, and, you know, I have time for Q&A.
Thanks so much, Samir. This was fantastic. It brings me back to my old investment management days. You know, I think one thing that would be helpful is a lot of people may be looking at their balance sheet and their cash burn. And I know a lot of times cash is sort of a plug number to get your balance sheet to work. Is that something that you do, or how do you come up with that to kind of model your cash or to think about how your cash is coming in so you can manage that?
Never plug your cash. That's how you, balance sheets have to balance. And that's your error check. If you plug your cash, you don't know if you have an error in the model. So, you know, the way you also want to build out that cash flow statement, so you get your ending cash from there. But definitely never plug your cash item. The whole model loses credibility. So it's tough to take it seriously. And there may be good pieces in it. It may be like a small error that you don't know, but then you have to start through it to figure out what that error is. And if you're an investor, it's, you know, look at the next model rather than dig through it. Obviously, if you're helping the company fix the model, that's a different story.
Right. Right on. No, it's funny because that's what I thought. And I know when you try to use that as a plug number, it's a bad practice. But a lot of people do it still just to make their balance sheet work rather than to think about what is my real cash and how am I going through it or not going through it, as the case may be.
Definitely. And also that brings up another point. You know, if you can build in error checks in your models, it's really helpful. So a lot of times you'll see something similar happen when you use sources and uses of cash for capital raises.
Yep.
People will plug a line item in the uses of cash that goes to anywhere. And that's, again, not the right way to do it, because if you have a mistake in the model, it won't show up if you plug it. So it's important not to plug any numbers, because then you're really going to have a hard time finding those errors. But if you're using those formulas the way it should be, so cash in the balance sheet should come from cash in the cash flow statement, you'll be able to track any errors and be able to address it a lot easier.
Got it. Thank you. Great presentation. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
What are some good sources for people, samples to find? So if they want to look at financial models online or find some good samples, templates to use as precedents, what's a good place to look for those?
So for the three-statement model, the Financial Model Institute has a good model, the one I just pulled up. Go to their website, fmiinstitute.com, look at sample exams, and you can just download their template. I think that's a pretty good one. If you Google financial models, you'll probably see a lot of things. There's a service called Eloquens, Eloquens, that has a lot of financial models that are pre-built as well.
Okay. Great. It was an excellent presentation.
Thanks, Chad. And feel free to reach out if anyone has any questions, either this or the recording. Definitely feel free to reach out.
Thanks for taking the time to listen. We love ideas and feedback, so feel free to send your thoughts to hello@deft.org. For more great content and to stay in the loop about community events and activities, follow us on social media and subscribe to our monthly newsletter. Everyone plays a part in building the innovative national security culture we want to see. To find where you fit, just go to deft.org/join. That's deft.org/join.